back to Red Ice Radio. It's so good to be able to speak to you once again. Thank you for taking the time to listen and that you're informing yourself about many of the issues you never hear anything about in the media or the official outlets of the propaganda ministry. Our websites are redicecreations.com and the brand new redicemembers.com, redicemembers.com. I'll let you know more about that towards the end of the first hour. Today we're talking with activist, speaker, and blogger Rosa Corey, who also is a forensic real estate appraiser specializing in eminent domain valuation. Her research into and fight against redevelopment led her to UN Agenda 21 and was the genesis to co-found the Santa Barbara Neighborhood Coalition, Democrats Against UN Agenda 21, and the Post-Sustainability Institute. She has been speaking and inspiring groups nationally to take action. She is the author of Behind the Green Mask, and you want to stay with us here today as we detail with Rosa how Agenda 21 is being used to transition the world into a global totalitarian state where one must pay to live. She'll explain how this agenda is the biggest public relations scam in history. We'll cover how this plan is designed to destroy the individual, create scarcity, and make us vulnerable to control, subjugated to the ideology of communitarianism. Stay with us to learn more. Hi, and welcome to the program, Rosa. Very nice to talk to you today. And of course, thank you for taking some time off from your busy schedule and talking with us today.
Oh, I'm so glad to be with you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little background in the beginning. Always interesting. You have a background as a commercial real estate appraiser. How did you get onto the track of Agenda 21, Rosa? Tell us a bit about that.
Well, I have, for my career, I have been a commercial real estate appraiser. My specialty is in eminent domain valuation, and I've been a district branch chief for the San Francisco division of the California Department of Transportation. I'm an expert witness. I testify in court and a litigation support person in land valuation and land use. So this is my background, and about 10 years ago, I recognized that something was going on, something serious was happening with land use, that when I went into planning departments across the San Francisco Bay Area and tried to find out what people could do with their land, it looked like there really was not anything that they could do by right. And this was a very serious thing. It was a change. And in my view, it was a planning revolution. And in my research, during the time that I was researching, I also became aware that the part of I had purchased some property in another town, and I found out that that was in a redevelopment area. And so my land was in that area, and I was invited to serve. I was elected to a board to oversee this huge redevelopment project. Enormous, 1,300 acres, very big. And so as I was reviewing that, I found that it was fraudulent. And so I brought that to the attention of the city, and they immediately tried to get me off of that board. And they did everything that they could to trap me, to malign me, to attack me. And so those two things together, I was researching redevelopment and also researching land restrictions, and I found that they both led to the same place, to United Nations Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. And, you know, at the time, I happened to be a liberal Democrat, and, you know, at the time, I found that this, you know, seemed to be something that was associated with people who are much more conservative politically. And, you know, frankly, when I first found out about it, I kind of was skeptical. I couldn't really quite believe it was real. But doing my research, I found that, yes, in fact, it is real. It is a global totalitarian state in progress right now. And it's amazing that it has been so successful that people are really unaware of what's going on.
Indeed, we're going to get into some of that here today and, of course, bring people up to speed who haven't heard about this before. First of all, why do you think that there are so few Democrats in America specifically then that are aware of this, Rosa?
Well, I would say, unfortunately, in the efforts, you know, of course, I'm going around the United States giving speeches and have you know, done quite a bit of media on this issue. And it is very disappointing to me to see how few Democrats, a few people on the left, are willing to look at this information. And I think it's because of the tremendous amount of indoctrination, the propaganda, and the sense that, you know, people feel that they cannot be environmentalists or concerned about the earth while at the same time exposing the fraud of sustainable development. And I think it's very important to know that this is a hijacking of the environmental movement. And so it's an emotional and intellectual learning curve. And I think people are beginning to be aware and beginning to kind of put that cognitive dissonance issue aside for themselves and be able to recognize that, yes, they can be, you know, socially progressive or whatever, and hold all of that inside themselves and also recognize that, yes, this is a global totalitarian takeover. It is globalization, corporatocracy, and, you know, this is the name for it, even though it has a green face.
They're very clever indeed. We're going to get into the details of this later, but what can you give us a little bit of the history of United Nations Agenda 21 for those who are new or maybe haven't heard about this before and don't realize kind of how it ties into the bigger picture, Rosa?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is, you know, it's so fascinating because, of course, you know, in the United States and you know, across the world, you know, this people who talk about it, people like me, people in the resistance, are sort of, you know, kind of called tinfoil hat or conspiracy theorists.
Right.
But in fact, this is an actual plan. It is the United Nations agenda for the 21st century. That's why it's called Agenda 21. And what it comes out of is in 1987, the United Nations World Commission on Environment and Development actually came up with the term sustainable development. And it, they said that it is development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their needs. And of course, that sounds great because, you know, nobody would want to compromise the ability of the people of the future to meet their needs. So they said, of course, right, you know, their conclusion was, yes, indeed, everything we're doing now is compromising the ability of future generations to meet their needs. And what shall we do about it? And the General Assembly said to the World Commission on Environment and Development, will you please come back in 5 years, in 1992, with the action plan to implement sustainable development worldwide? And they said, sure. And they came back in 1992 with Agenda 21, the agenda for the 21st century. And what that is the action plan, the blueprint, to inventory and control all land, all water, all minerals, all plants, all animals, all construction, all means of production, all energy, all information, and all human beings in the world. This is a huge totalitarian comprehensive plan. It was signed on to by 179 nations, including, of course, the United States and Canada and Sweden and, you know, 179 nations. And then those nations took it back to their countries and implemented it. And this is what we're dealing with now. This is a 20-year-old plan. And one of the things that's coming up for us now is that we are moving out of the inventory phase of this plan and into control. And that's one reason why so many people are beginning to be aware of it.
Interesting. Inventories, it's like they've been tracking and tracing everything, try to make a survey of the assets, if you will, or resources that they have available. And maybe there is a new step in the plan now then, as you said, to begin to implement some of this. And it's interesting to me as well that a lot of this ties back, if we go back to the first Rio summit, the Earth summit back in 92, that they've just now, a couple of months ago here, held the second one, or the follow-up, Plus 20 Earth Summit. So in your view, mm-hmm. did you look into this, and were there has there been an update in any way on Agenda 21?
Oh, absolutely. Rio plus 20, of course, you know, was held. This is the 20-year anniversary of Agenda 21. It was held back again in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, and attended by hundreds of nations and, of course, many thousands of corporations and non-governmental organizations. And what you'll see if you, you know, if you read about Rio plus 20, you'll hear that it was a failure. That, oh no, we just didn't get what we needed. And what this is a way to get you to sort of go back to sleep and think that nothing happened there. But in fact, what did happen was what was exactly intended to happen. And that is, that $500 million was actually, excuse me, $500 trillion, $513 billion in commitments were made between nations and non-governmental organizations and corporations. Because when, you know, what we're talking about here is a transformation from jurisdictional boundaries and from representational government, representative government, to government by unelected boards and commissions and public-private partnerships. We're going from, you know, when you look at your local government, you have local government, then you have county or, you know, whatever they call it there, county government, and then state or provincial government and federal. But this new plan is top-down. It's global, regional, neighborhood, and none of those are elected. So what happens is you have corporations joining with nonprofit organizations, and which are funded also by government. And then you have rules and regulations made by people you do not elect who are restricting your ability to live freely. And this is happening all over the world.
Is this how they, in your view, are going to bring in world government? They're going to do it under the green umbrella or behind the green mask, as we're going to get into later, the title of your book.
Yeah. Yes, yes. In fact, you know, look at how successful it's been, because part of this plan, of course, is to destroy the economy, because when you are financially strapped, when you are unable to be independent, you're more dependent, and then you're more willing to go along to get along. What we're talking about here is a loss of independence, and especially, you know, the other thing we're talking about is a move from the rural areas into the urban areas. This is a plan to get people out of the rural and suburban areas, off of the natural resources, out of the forests, out of the farmlands, out of the deserts, out of the land, and into city centers where they can be more easily managed and surveilled. This is part of the plan, control.
You know, there are so many aspects of this that are so important to talk about, the public-private partnership, as you mentioned before, the a new kind of form of, well, government, really. It's corporatism, where you basically have big monopoly companies working together with government, and one runs the other, or the other runs the other one. It doesn't really matter. We get the same results at the end. But I guess before we go into the history or further into this and some of the components of it, for a moment, if we just go back to the history again, I want to try to get a little bit closer to who is behind this primarily. I know that Maurice Strong has played a prominent role in this, maybe even the Club of Rome. But who do you know was a part of that meeting in Rio 20 years ago, Rosa?
Well, it's quite interesting. You know, of course, I'm an American, and, you know, so I look at it from an American point of view, and, you know, I try not to because I do travel quite a bit, but, you know, but of course, the Americans, you know, were vitally, you know, a vital part of this. And, of course, you know, George H.W. Bush, our president, signed on to it. But besides that, John Kerry, who had, you know, if you recall, I don't know if you recall, but he ran for president here in the United States. Nancy Pelosi, who's very, you know, who's the at the top of our House of Representatives. We had many elected officials at Rio, as did other countries. And, you know, so what you have is the agreement of government. And this goes counter to what we can imagine. You know, you would think to yourself, well, why would a nation want to give up its sovereignty? And, you know, what would be the reason for this? And if we're looking at, we're looking at what the way I characterize this, is besides the fact that it's the biggest public relations scam that's ever happened in the entire world, it's also a tremendous, basically a tremendous organized crime takeover. And so this is what we're seeing, and I don't know what it is that people were promised. Certainly the large industrialists, the people like Maurice Strong, who, is a power broker and, immensely wealthy, probably, these are people who are sociopaths, psychopaths. There have always been people like this running the world. The thing that's different about this is that they have the technological capability now to pull this off. The Nazis were not able to, although IBM made it tremendously possible for them to do what they did, as did Siemens Corporation, and you'll recognize these as two big players currently in this plan. But, technologically, we're seeing a possibility of total surveillance, where every single tree in your entire country can be identified. And when we're talking about that, and then we look at carbon sinks and, carbon offsets, and this is, going to be something where you're going to basically have to pay to live, this is a capability now that is making this plan even more possible.
How close do you think we are to carbon taxes and everything else? There's so many different suggestions in the works right now to begin, and to a certain degree, I think there already is. Penalties and taxes extra on companies that are, putting out a lot of carbon dioxide and everything else. But for the people itself, do you think we're pretty close to that, or is it still years away?
Well, it's hard to say on that. They bring these things up. The Chicago Climate Exchange here in the United States started up and then, crashed. There's a Western Climate Initiative here in California that was supposed to include 7 states and 5 provinces of Canada, and now it's down to California and Quebec. And that in itself is quite fascinating to, once again, you want to remember that this is about destroying boundaries, sovereign boundaries. I would say that, the way these things happen is that they come in waves. They'll push hard, try and inundate us with many things that are happening at once, and keep the propaganda on, and then, go as far as they can and then recede and come back again. So I don't know exactly how close we are, but I do know that if you are just an average American and you check on what your carbon footprint is, it's about 27 tons per year of carbon. Your cost, basically just to be living, is about $500. Your tax would be about $500 U.S. So we're talking about, costs that would be added to everything that we want to do. And this is another thing. Impoverishing us is part of this plan.
You mentioned a good thing earlier that I want to bring up again, that the latest conference is seen as a failure. I remember COP15 in Copenhagen. We were there. Same thing there. It was seen as a failure. And this as well, I think, is a strategy, because imagine the push by the people who are, tied into the environmentalist movement. And they obviously feel that not enough is being made or done about this quick enough, fast enough. So it's almost like they get more wind in their sail after a conference like this is run through, and they feel nothing has been done. Therefore, they push even more to get this implemented. Right, Rosa?
Yes, that's exactly right. This is, I want to emphasize, of course, I personally, it's not as if I'm not concerned with recycle, reuse, with conservation. My partner is a general contractor, a builder, and she built an entire house, a two-story house out of recycled materials. I think that the problem, is not that we want to, be mindful of our use on, on the planet. What it is that, this is being used as a manipulation. And of course, it is a huge propaganda machine. And, I think one of the things that's quite fascinating about this, unfortunately, I've been on the receiving end of it, is how hard the proponents of this plan are working to attack people who are speaking up about it, who are speaking the truth about it, because this is a communitarian plan. It's, basically balances, so-called, the rights of the individual against the rights of the community. which are, you know, not delineated, not, you know, not written out in a constitution. And so you have, you know, people, every individual basically then is at odds with the global community. And so this is a problem because then, you know, obviously everything you're doing then is a threat to the planet. And this is how, you know, it's couched. So, you know, when you're looking at, basically, if you want to look at where we're going with this, we're going towards the EU, which, you know, the EU isn't even as far as the EU can go yet.
Of course, they have a lot of work to do. Yeah.
Right. It's an interim thing in itself. But, you know, I just spoke at an international conference on global governance, and one of the other speakers was President Václav Klaus of the Czech Republic. And he said, you know, we fought to be free of the Soviet Union, and we clamored to be part of the European Union. And now we're under the control of Brussels. We've lost our freedom.
Indeed.
And I think, you know, this is serious.
It sure is. Absolutely. Can you tell us a little bit more about communitarianism? It's a very important thing that many people don't know about. Of course, many people know socialism, communism. How, if in any way, is this different, Rosa?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good question. Communitarianism, basically, as I said, it says that the rights of the individual need to be balanced against the rights of the collective. Of the, you know, for it's all for the common good. A communitarian state might be something like Red China, you know, China under communist China, or Soviet Union when it was fully communist, although who knows what we're talking about now, and Nazi Germany, you know, and we're talking about all for the common good, all for the fatherland. The individual is selfish. We have to look at, you know, what's good for everyone, and this includes, you know, basically developing, you know, a common collective vision of the future. And that is one in which social, environmental, and economic objectives are, you know, are delineated, and everyone is working in unison towards them. And this is part of, you know, of what you're looking at when you're looking at this propaganda plan. So when you're balancing your rights, now, you know, here in the United States, we are guaranteed by our written constitution the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And, you know, this does not mean that you can do anything you want to your neighbor. I'm not talking about anarchy here. And what I am talking about is that certain individual rights are guaranteed. And, you know, freedom of speech, freedom to assemble, et cetera. But, under communitarianism, those rights are not delineated. They're not written. So the rights of the community can change at any time. They're given or taken away by a government. And in the United States, our rights are guaranteed by the Constitution. We're born with them. They cannot be taken away from us. So this is the difference between communitarianism and a representative constitutional government. So what we're having, you know, what we're seeing here is that we're actually, you know, slowly our, you know, our rights have been eroding to the point where people's education has re-indoctrinated them to the sense that they are selfish for expecting to have the rights that are guaranteed to them under our Constitution.
Oh, wow. That's incredible how they pull this off. And it's being pushed all the time, of course, in movies, television programs, children's stories.
Yeah.
One just have to look around and it's there. Is that part of Agenda 21, the educational bit?
Oh, it so is, absolutely. I mean, this is... it's an incredible plan. You know, I do research all the time. You know, of course, I spend maybe 10 or 12 hours a day just doing research. And, you know, most of my time I'm either cursing or you know, standing in awe of the brilliance of this plan. Because, yes, it includes education. And, you know, the educational system is deeply embedded in sustainable development principles. And in fact, I, you know, right now I'm holding in my hand a book called Rescue Mission: Planet Earth, a children's edition of Agenda 21. and it has, you know, colored pictures that are drawn by the children of the world, and an introduction by Boutros-Ghali of the United Nations. It was put out by the UN. And inside the book, in one page, it says, "The planet groans every time it registers another birth."
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and, you know, this, so children, you know, you'll find that sustainable development principles are embedded in every course from pre-kindergarten all the way to postgraduate school. And something that, you know, that is very important to know about this plan is that it is, you know, you will see it as primarily what you'll see it as is a land use and resource control plan. Because, as I said, it's a way to get people out of the rural and suburban areas into the cities where they can be more easily controlled. So children are basically being taught that they are destroying the planet and that they need to use less and that they need to live in smaller, you know, apartments and have access to transportation. Now, you know, access, that's all cool. You know, I ride a bike. Access to transportation is great. But this is an ideology. It is not, we're not talking about just the hardscape. We're talking about the philosophy. And this is pervasive in education.
That's just incredible. The mega hubs that are being built, if you will, or every city is being built out, that's where people go to you know, be have access to the jobs and everything else, and it's amazing how they've managed to get people to basically leave the countryside. And wow, there's just so many components to this that are so important to talk about. If we go back to this idea of, as you mentioned before, that there are real environmental problems, people have a unfortunately an emotional disconnection happening here as well, because they have the programming in the background, or they're genuinely obviously concerned for the environment, but they don't understand maybe that it's being used for this purpose to manipulate people into, you know, social engineering to have them behave in a certain way to control them more. Basically, how do you approach that to those kinds of people? Can you just preface this to talk about that they've hijacked the environmental movement, or where do you kind of approach this?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. Well, you know, one of the things that I think it's important to talk about, and of course, you know, as I said, all of us are concerned about, you know, not wasting and recycling when we can, and, you know, being concerned about, you know, just basically how we're living. And I think that's all very important. What I am seeing, you know, of course, I fly, my carbon footprint's pretty big, so I'm flying back and forth across the United States giving speeches all the time. And of course, I'm flying over the country a lot, and I look down on it, and what do I see? A lot of agricultural land.
Yeah.
A whole lot of it.
Farms everywhere. It's crazy.
Right. It's a huge agricultural nation. And what happens when you move people out of the rural and suburban areas and into the cities, like, for instance, if you're in New York City and you're going from 168th Street to 50th, you know, that's going to take you a long time. That is your world. You think that the whole world is like that. And you may not be aware, especially, you know, if you're a young person, you may not be aware of how much land there is in the world. Look at Sweden, for instance, where you are. I think, aren't you one of the largest countries in Europe?
We're the third largest country in Europe, and we're only 9 million people, which is very low down there anyway on the scale. Yeah.
It's like 50 people to the mile, I think you have.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, and, you know, 50 people to the square mile or something like that. And, you know, but of course there are many countries that are much more densely populated. But what I'm saying is that what's happening is that people are, you know, basically being told that everything that they're doing is destructive to the planet itself. And so when you're talking about things on an emotional level, where we're not connecting them up with what's real, which is that individual farmers, are being driven off of their land, so that land can then be taken on by the huge mega corporations, where you know, farmers are actually being restricted on what they can do, what they can plant, where their animals can be, what trees they can take down, what water they can use. And when you see that, the plan is actually designed to create scarcity. Okay. So when you have a creation, you know, when you have scarcity being created and you have people feeling that, you know, there's not enough and that if they don't conserve, they're not going to have anything, then you create that kind of emotional imbalance and fear. And part of a totalitarian state, part of the erection of totalitarianism, and I do talk about this in my book, is terror. You know, because when you're frightened, you are not thinking clearly. And that is part of communitarianism, because communitarianism uses fear, it uses stress, peer pressure, and ridicule. Many of these elements you'll find in these visioning plans that you go to. You know, you're going to go to Vision Stockholm or something like that, where they're going to talk to you about how you need to build more higher dense buildings in the center of your town and use your tax dollars to pay for it. And, and if you don't do that, then you're going to be destroying the planet. Then, you know, we're going to have scarcity and there's not going to be enough. And this kind of stress on us makes us unable to think clearly. And this is part of this plan. This is why so many people are being indoctrinated and why people who are really genuinely good people, who think of themselves as environmentalists, are actually, being manipulated. This is the biggest public relations scam in the history of the world. Of course, people are manipulated. The jargon is designed to manipulate you.
Can you tell us a little bit about ICLEI? I think this is primarily in the U.S. and also if you've heard that there's something similar in other parts of the world, in Europe or somewhere else.
Well, I am so glad you asked me that question in the way that you did, because imagine this, ICLEI, the International Council on Local Environmental Initiatives, international, right?
Yep.
Now, they have just changed their name to Local Governments for Sustainability, and that's so you won't think that they're international, but they are. This is an international group. It has over almost 8,000 members, and I'm talking about cities, 8,000 cities worldwide are members of the International Council on Local Environmental Initiatives, including in Sweden. You have, and this is hard to believe, I didn't even know there were 158 cities in Sweden, but according to ICLEI, 158 Swedish cities are members, including all of your major large population cities, about 8 million people in Sweden.
Yeah, so that means all of the cities are included in this.
That's right. I know. It, you know, there's, what do you have, 9 million people in Sweden? 8 yeah. million of them are in ICLEI cities.
Wow.
And so this is the illusion, you know, this is the thing, is that, oh, ICLEI, International Council of Local Environmental Initiatives, is just an American thing, isn't it? Well, no, it's not.
See, that's what I thought first. World. That's why I mentioned it in that way. So I'm glad you brought that up. Go ahead,
Lisa. I know. Right. So let me tell you what this is, because this is heavy, okay? We're talking about the erection of a parallel government worldwide. And, you know, hey, don't think I don't know that this all sounds real crazy. I hope that people aren't hearing it for the first time. But if you are, you're going to think, oh, this woman is out of her mind. The truth is, yes, this stuff is crazy, and no, I am not. I'm a reporter on what is really going on now in our world. So ICLEI is a membership organization. It is made up of elected officials and also non-governmental organizations worldwide. It's headquartered in Bonn, Germany, and then, it has local, you know, offices around the world. It is an implementation and funding arm for United Nations Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. And yes, it's there in Sweden. It's all over Europe. If you, they took their map down. I can't believe I got a screenshot of ICLEI's world map because it's gone now. But the one that you'll find on the internet is an old one from 2008, and they've multiplied their members sixfold since 2008. So that should give you great concern. What they do is they sell greenhouse gas emissions monitoring software, but their main thing that they do is they monitor and control your emissions. So this might not sound like such a big deal, but what they do is they find out they get into your water supply. They find out exactly where your water is coming from, where your energy is coming from, where the output is, how it's managed. Not only that, but they've just rolled out a water campaign in Southeast Asia and Australia and New Zealand that is also full monitoring. So, and it's about scarcity. It's about reducing your use, restricting your use. Here in the United States and around the world, the plan is to reduce our energy output, our greenhouse gas emissions, 80% below 1990 levels by the year 2050. Now, if you think about that, 80% below 1990 levels.
That is quite a bit. That is quite a bit.
Yeah. So I have a chart in my book where I went, I wonder what year that's going to be, right? Mm. So I went and I checked it out and I did the math. Well, you know, you're back in like 1934, a fabulous year for the world.
Oh, wow.
The Great Depression. And then if you look at it, you know, of course we have more people now than we did in 1934. So if you look at it on a per capita basis, we're back in the 1880s. So this is a war on the industrial world, too. I mean, the fantasy is that we are going to neo-feudalism.
Yeah.
This is peonage. This is where we're headed.
Yeah. Neo-feudalism, very, very good point. Now, there always is a dichotomy here. It's either we stop progress or we die kind of thing. There's nothing, very lack of vision, I guess I would say. And often when we're offered new types of energy sources and so forth, it's kind of, I don't know, it's a little bit backward. And I always like to ask people when we talk about the environmental issues, or those who are against the policies of all the environmentalism out there. In your view then, Rosa, why is it, do you think, that we don't see any development of new energies? We hear stories that, yes, they're out there, but they're being suppressed. They're tremendous inventions by people from around the globe. Crazy mm-hmm. stuff, seemingly, that seems to be workable and operable, but these people have actually been taken out for the reasons that you just mentioned, that they are not meant to end up in the hands of mankind, so we could become independent from the tyranny that we're under right now. What do you think about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a couple things to say about that, but one thing I just want to mention, what you just asked me sounded like the movie Thrive, and I just want to say that movie Thrive, in case people like it and they think, oh, this is really a cool movie and I'm really on board with it, that movie is a manipulation. I know you didn't really mention it, but let me just throw it in here.
Sure, go ahead.
That movie, Thrive, is a manipulation because, of course, you know, it lays out everything. And you're like, yeah, 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 right, all right, excellent. They're laying it out here. Then at the end, you know, okay, so what's the solution? The solution is for you to somehow, you know, like contemplate your navel and become, you know, a new higher being or something. Instead of turning on your government and saying, hey, we are calling a halt to this right now. And I think it's very important that, you know, as a member of the resistance, which you are now that you're listening to this information, you recognize that you need to be active, that you cannot expect someone else to handle this issue for you, that this is a worldwide, global, it's a nonpartisan, grassroots effort to fight this and to stop this. So, talking about whether there are alternative energies available, what I do know is that there's a huge, one of the things that this plan does is it basically, in order to create scarcity in a world that has a lot, it's necessary to waste as much as possible. And so you have, you know, a nation like the United States, which has tremendous amount of production, tremendous amount of mineral wealth and, natural resource wealth. It's necessary to then waste this in order to create this illusion of scarcity. So, for instance, wind power, which does not, is not as dependable, is not dependable, requires huge subsidies, is being pushed with tremendous, tremendous tax subsidies here in the United States, primarily because it is not dependable and because it does waste our financial resources. I'm sure that there are, you know, it does seem ridiculous that after 100 years that we're still using, you know, the gas combustion engine.
Right.
Know, I mean, obviously there should be many, many things. I've seen other, you know, ideas for this, and I think that is great. I'm not blocking that. I'm not working for the gas companies, you know. I'm not into that. What that's not, you know, no one's paying my way here. So, but what I do see is that there is a huge manipulation to create scarcity and keep scarcity happening. And I think that it's very important to recognize that that part of what happened, you know, you might ask yourself, as I have, why is it that so much, you know, that there were so many dictators that came to power, you know, that what was it about the post-World War I era that, you know, brought up this, you know, tremendous surge in dictatorship, you know, Stalin, Hitler, Hirohito, Mussolini, Franco, you know, and I might say, well, I won't, but anyway, you know, and the thing was, is that right after World War I, people were completely collapsed. You know, this was
right.
A tremendous financial collapse, right? So I think, you know, what you're looking at here is a creation of a situation in which people will be willing to do anything. And this is very serious. When you're willing to do anything in order to survive, then you are much more able to be controlled.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And again, if we're at that stage, not independent, but we live in cities where we're used to the electricity, we're used to the water, we're not, you know, prone to survive or take care of ourselves that we, you know, we could to a certain degree if we lived out more rurally, out on the countryside. And imagine, Rosa, as well, if what you mentioned before is connected to the smart grid, the smart system that they call it out there, that would potentially, you know, punish you in a sense if you overuse of your ration. Either it's that electricity or water or you're heating your house, they could raise the price on it or flat out actually even shut it off for you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And the smart grid, you know, is a worldwide grid, and it is designed to control every single electronic device that is connected to it. And of course, you know, this is the goal, is to have everything connected to the grid. You know, even things that, you know, that don't need to be connected to the grid. So, you know, there's a phase out of gas, for instance, and I'm talking about natural gas. Here in the United States, natural gas, although it's plentiful and inexpensive, is being phased out by cities. They are making regulations that say that in the future you have to have electric appliances so that they can be regulated, so that they can be turned off or slowed down or browned out. And, you know, so that the thing that concerns me, aside from, you know, of course, people bring up concerns about health issues from radio frequencies, which I don't go into that because I don't personally have any proof of that. Everything I'm talking about, I have proof for and full documentation for. But what we're talking about here with the smart grid and smart meters is that they can be controlled remotely. No one needs to come onto your property to control your use. And especially if you're an activist or, you know, just speaking the truth about something, you're more vulnerable. And I think that talking about, you know, having civil rights chilled or feeling that you're not as free to speak your mind, especially in this world that we live in now where you never know whether you're going to be identified as being someone who's a terrorist or not, you know, having your ability to have access to information and resources is being controlled is terrible. And what I'm seeing also with the internet, you know, obviously will be, you know, where everything is being tracked that we say on the telephone, everything we look at on the internet, and of course all of our bank records here in the United States, and I'm sure there too, our bank records, our hotel records, our internet records, everything is being reviewed in real time.
Yeah, it's crazy. One of the positive things, there's much more we need to outline about this, but one of the positive things that came out a while back is, I think was in June this year, that Alabama actually threw out Agenda 21 across the state, right? What do you know about this, and how did this happen?
Yeah, well, across the United States, there is a movement now of people, you know, who are becoming aware and who are standing up and speaking out. And, you know, I do go, you know, crisscross across the United States. I speak all over the U.S. And several different states have been trying to get ballot measures passed or acts passed by their governing bodies. But Alabama was able to do it. Senate Bill 577 just passed and signed into law by their governor that basically repudiates United Nations Agenda 21, Sustainable Development, and says that no money should be going to ICLEI, the International Council on Local Environmental Initiatives, or to any other NGO, non-governmental organization that is supporting United Nations Agenda 21. So this is really quite important. It's the first state that did pass a law like this, and I'm sure it will be litigated almost immediately, and we'll definitely have to follow up and see, you know, what happens there. But the thing that is really important is that we're bringing this out of the shadows. This is a stealth plan, and right until recently, if you talked about it, people would act like you were crazy because they would deny that it even exists. Now you're hearing, oh, that Agenda 21. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't realize you meant that agenda. Oh, that's a good thing. You know, that's what you're hearing now, right? So we're bringing it out of the shadows. We're taking it out into the streets, and people are, you know, talking about it. And this is very important. The people's media is really making this happen. And I definitely appreciate that you are giving this time to this very important issue.
Thank you. Now, do you think it could be further pushed onto Alabama? Will they be able to stay out of it at this stage, or will they try to circumvent here and get it in there anyway in some way?
Well, here's the thing, you know, and I'd like to really make this clear. You know, we haven't really talked about this too much, you know, just kind of gone around it a little bit. The thing is, it's not that it's trying to get in. It's not like a virus knocking on the door trying to get into Alabama. It is in Alabama. It's in every state of the United States. It's in every country in the world already.
Right.
It's there now. And although they made a law, and, you know, hopefully I will be assisting the legislators of Alabama on this issue, the thing is you can make a law, but what you really need to do is go back to your earlier laws and start to purge them of these principles, because this is a plan to erect regional governance, and it's done through regional boards and commissions and through very restrictive regulations on land use. So you can't just, you know, write a four paragraph law and leave it at that. You have to actually do the work and go back through your laws and regulations and clean them out. And this is a big job, and there are some small cities that are taking this on now in the United States.
Really good. Now, we're going to take a short break here in a little bit. We're going to continue and talk more in the second segment, much more to discuss. Before we do that, though, I want to maybe you can mention your websites and your book, Behind the Green Mask, You and Agenda 21, and where our listeners can go if they want to pick up a copy and learn more about this, Rosa.
Great. Well, thanks so much for asking. We have two websites that you can go to, and I'll tell you the websites in a sec. The book Behind the Green Mask, UN Agenda 21, is available on Amazon, and we do ship internationally. So, you know, we do get a lot of orders internationally, and you can just go to Amazon.com. And the other, so our websites are postsustainabilityinstitute.org, postsustainabilityinstitute.org, and the other one is Democrats Against UN Agenda democratsagainst.com, democratsagainstunagenda21.com. And both of these sites have lots and lots of great information, including flyers, because this is our principal way of getting this information out to people. Leafleting, putting leaflets on doorsteps is a very powerful way to get the information out.
All right, very good. We're going to have the websites up on redeyescreations.com as well, so you can easily click through there and links to the book and everything else. Now, we're going to return here in a little bit, but before we do that, I just want to, you know, say again that there's very interesting that there's so many, you know, environmental problems in the world, but how selective it is as well, Rosa, considering, I mean, you mentioned farming on its own. That's a major environmental restructuring of the planet, if you look like it. We have a grid works now across. I mean, Europe is full of it as well, in America as well. And so little is being said about genetically modified, crops mm-hmm. and organisms. And so it's kind of like a double standard in a way. Isn't that funny how this has happened?
Mm-hmm. This is really that. But when you think about it, see, this is how everything comes together under United Nations Agenda 21, unfortunately. So if you look at, for instance, GMO, globalization, corporatocracy, smart meters, domestic surveillance, endless war, you know, all of these things are part of United Nations Agenda 21. So when you see restrictions on food development, or when you see, small farmers being, you know, basically driven out of business, this is part of the plan. And that's what's so difficult for people, because so many people on the left are fighting Agenda 21, but they don't realize it, and they're also being indoctrinated to support it at the same time.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, we'll carry on with more here in the next segment. Websites again, postsustainabilityinstitute.org, and also take a look at democratsagainstunagenda21.com. Stay with us, Rosa. We'll be right back with more after this break. Before we proceed with hour two to talk more about what is behind the green mask with Rosa Khoury, I want to inform all our listeners and members that we have a brand new website for all our subscribers, redeyesmembers.com. That is the place where you should go to listen, download, and watch all of our content from now on as a member. All radio programs in their entirety are collected on this website. That means when new radio programs are released, you should go straight to redeyesmembers.com as a member and simply click into the program, log in, and from there stream or download all the parts there right away. We have some very useful and powerful features on the website that I hope you take the time and opportunity to explore and look further into. For example, there is a new and much better, easier search function. We now have a comment feature on all radio programs and also on the TV and extra program pages as well, where of course you can discuss the program or have your say, your input with your fellow Red Eyes members. There is a better overview of your account. You can simply click into My Account, log in again, and from there you can change your details. You can request a new password or change it. You can update your email address or renew your subscription. It's also much easier to subscribe and add or renew a subscription. You also, of course, have instant access when you sign up. No more temporary details as before. If you have any questions about this, go to redeyesmembers.com, click into our FAQ, Frequently Asked Questions, and read more. We have a big help section there for you. And one of the most exciting things is the new and very powerful RSS feeds with all content going back to 2006. We have radio programs sorted by year. We also have a feed with the latest 50 programs. You can subscribe to all of these feeds, of course, and get access to all the content from, example, iTunes, your iPhone with the Downcast app, or if you have another RSS feed reader installed on your device or computer. We're looking into Android usage, but the main website works fine with Android phones. Again, we have more information about this in our FAQ. The RSS feeds with all video content, our TV episodes and the extra material, is accessible very easy. And from these, you can play the video straight in your browser or your iPhone. You can download the MP4 files if you're on an Android or desktop computer. Again, the most important thing is just remember to click into any program first on redeyesmembers.com to log in. And then if you access the RSS feeds in your browser, you can just click to download straight from there. We're very proud of the new website, and we hope you find it much easier to use and more accessible. RedEyesMembers.com. Go there to subscribe and get full access if you haven't already. Or maybe if your account has run out and you didn't get moved over to the new system for this reason. We're going to proceed now with Rosa Khoury on UN's Agenda 21. Stay with us.